Welcome to Public Health Matters with Dr. Christina M. Madison, the founder and CEO of the Public Health Pharmacist, PLLC, a public health consulting firm. She is passionate about spreading knowledge on public health in order to create healthier and happier communities.
Welcome to another episode of Public Health Matters with myself, Dr. Christina Madison, the public health pharmacist. And today I'm so excited to have another phenomenal guest with me today, Dr. Jam. You have probably seen her all over Twitter, as well as other social media channels. Her legend is just without reproach. Obviously, we're going to dive into a little bit more details, but I'm so thrilled to have you as a guest today. And obviously, we know that your background is in antimicrobial stewardship and all things related to the pandemic, which I know you've been called upon for your expertise. But today, I'm really excited to talk with you about health equity and how we can all do a better job of incorporating health equity into our practices. So can you introduce yourself, my dear?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Madison, for having me. I am a fan, so I'm super excited to be here with you. My name is Dr. Jacinda Abdul-Mutu-Kabir. I go by Dr. Jam because it just is a lot easier, but also a super cool nickname. I'm currently an assistant professor at Loma Linda University. I trained in infectious diseases, so in a pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics ID research fellowship with Dr. Mike Ryback in Detroit. But I also got a master's in public health from Wayne State as well. So working or now with the new practice that I have, advocating for vaccine equity and equity in other aspects of medicine, it's really allowed for me to really marry both of my interests, so antimicrobial resistance as well as public health. So I'm really excited to dive more into that today.
So I think the first question that I would like to ask you is just, how did you sort of get into the role of being more present and more of an advocate as well as a beacon of hope and light, as I'd like to say, for those of us in the pharmacy profession as it relates to health equity, as well as just looking at it from the standpoint of how do we marry that with our existing practices?
Right. So I think that for me, and I'm not super far removed from pharmacy school, so celebrating my 5 year this year, yay. So I think that for me, when I was in pharmacy school, I always had kind of this internal wish list of like the professor I would have wanted to have when I was in pharmacy school, or the experiences I would have wanted to have and things like that. So I think for me, the things that push me forward is thinking about just this future generation of pharmacy and medicine, and how can I be to them what I wanted when I was in their positioning. And I think that the COVID-19 pandemic, it was really by happenstance that I ended up in these different places advocating for equity during this time. And it was because of the fact that I was actually talking with girlfriends. So friends of mine, we have a group of ID pharmacists. We call ourselves Black Girls in ID. And we were texting in our group chat when the vaccines came out, and we said, hey, you know, we should have a journal club. A friend of mine, actually Dr. Michelle Maxim, she said, we should have a journal club, you know, regarding this stuff. And I was like, girl, I'm Zoomed out. I don't want to do a journal club. I've been teaching over Zoom all year. But then as we began to think more about the vaccines, it became more of a conversation of not only should we have a journal club, but let's do this on a larger scale for the Black community at large. So it was really from that conversation or that webinar that we had, it drew about 200 or so people, and we provided vaccine information, that I kind of identified a good place for me to go and to provide more information there. I ended up doing a podcast and other webinars, but then more importantly, we ended up developing a relationship with faith leaders in Loma Linda. So I was able to become a part of that collaboration and that relationship that they have with faith leaders there. And then we took our webinars on the road. So now I provide the vaccine information in that type of format. And then we do the vaccination clinics. But in the vaccination clinics, we are sure to include students. So I get to go back to that. What would I have wanted when I was a student? How would I have wanted to see health equity? And I'm able to put myself alongside other people in the clinic, of course, are able to provide students with these tangible experiences and allow for them to really see health equity up close.
Can I, first and foremost, can I ask how I can be involved in the Black Ladies in ID? Because I would like to join, because I did not know that that was a thing. And I would definitely like to be involved if possible, which is amazing. I think one thing I do want to just like clarify, because obviously, you know, this, I think the whole concept around D&I, right? So diversity, inclusion, and health equity, like those terms keep getting thrown around like a lot. And especially like more recently, as we see more companies and businesses focusing on inclusion and diversity within their organizations, I feel like it's this like buzz term, but it's like, what does it really mean, right? And so I think just understanding, it's not just enough to have diversity, right? Because we truly won't have diversity until we have inclusion. And we're never gonna have inclusion until we identify structural racism and the inequities that exist within our healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you wanna maybe just touch on like what you've personally been doing, because I know you talk about this a lot. I know you are super involved in the health equity PRN for ACCP. I don't know if you want to touch on that a little bit, but sort of this thought process behind the fact that the playing field is not equal for everyone. So it's not just about things being equal, but them actually being just. And that factor of having a just situation is where equity comes into play, because we know that in a lot of cases, especially in communities of color, the deck is stacked against us. So right. What do we do?
Right. No, I completely agree with every single point that you made. And I think that the health equity PRN really, it was an idea that John Allen, who was the past president, he came to myself and Dr. Hope Campbell and Dr. Lakeisha Butler. We had all written a paper together talking about the leadership for like 7 recommendations for increasing Black leadership amongst like pharmacy organizations. It was published at AJHP. And then we continued to remain in communication, the 4 of us. And then he pitched the idea of developing a health equity PRN, because and then he now serves as the dean of health equity there at the University of Florida School of Pharmacy, so really engaged there. And when he came up with that idea of the PRN, he went forth and, you know, made that possible. But I think that it allows for us to really push these conversations, just as you said, and put them on just that forefront. But more importantly, one thing that I'd always advocate for or talk about is identifying where it is that we fall short. And I think that's the biggest issue, because we can say we want things to be diverse, equitable, and inclusive, but until we actually quantify, you know, our current representation of different healthcare professions, of different racial and ethnic minoritized groups within the healthcare profession, and we state, you know, this is not representative to what it is that we want to see, we'll never be able to be equitable, because you have to be able to identify what those numbers look like and things of that sort. So that's something that I really try to advocate for. And I think the health equity PRN tries to advocate for, even with our past conversation that we have with you discussing maternal disparities amongst minoritized groups. I think that the biggest thing is actually recognizing that disparities exist, quantifying, putting numbers to how these disparities do exist, and then a call to action. How do we overcome them? And then I think that one thing that I always talk about is holding the powers that be accountable for how it is that, you know, if we want to use health equity, then let's use it correctly. Let's make sure that the things that we are doing are equitable. They are just. Even when it came down to test to treat, you know, that was something that could have really been a measure that could increase pharmacoequity, especially with the COVID-19 therapeutics. But then we leave out pharmacists who have been so integral in ensuring that, you know, individuals are able to receive access to the vaccinations. I mean, we just talked about the vaccine equity clinics, but I mean, even we have other folks that do them. And then you yourself do the vaccine equity, like making these vaccines accessible to communities. And we could have used that model right there, you know, for test to treat and really, you know, learn from what it is that we did before. But, you know, in this loose measure to address health equity, we kind of hit the top of that halfway. So we do just enough when it comes to equity. So something that I always, I really advocate for, and we try to really advocate for in the PRN is to meet equity full on and to really do what we can to address that.
Your visibility has been extraordinarily impactful. So thank you for that. Thank you for showing up. I know it sounds like just the bare minimum, but like half the time, we're not doing what we're saying we're going to do because the people who matter are not showing up. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say thank you for that, because just you being in that role as a woman of color, it's so impactful. And I think being that messenger and being that, I said it before, but being that beacon of hope and light, like it makes such a difference, because like our involvement, like you have no idea who's listening. You have no idea who's watching, and you have no idea what they're going to do with that information. And so I always say, I'm always on my best behavior. Like my grandmother always told me, right? Like, if you don't got nothing good to say, don't say nothing at all. Right. Because you never know, who's watching. And, you know, we hear this all the time, but as you know, people of color, it's like, we have to be better and be even more so, because it's like we can't even get our foot in the door because we're already perceived as being less than. And that's the thing that I want to break. I want to break that and dismantle that and get to the heart of that. We've proven ourselves time and time again. But why is it that we have to keep proving ourselves again? Like what is the crux behind that? And when we look at how this pandemic has disproportionately impacted Black and Brown communities and our Indigenous brothers and sisters, it's not just the fact that we are brown, right? It's the fact that the system is rigged to do what it was meant to do. People are like, oh, the system isn't working. No. The system is doing exactly what it was supposed to do, which was to disenfranchise and to limit the ability for us to get access to care, and more importantly, access to quality care. Mm-hmm. So, how do we fix this, right? Like, I feel like, you know, talking about it is one of the things that we can do. Right. You being on this podcast, which I think is extraordinarily important, but ultimately, like, how do we break down these structural barriers? And I think we need to look at ways to engage our pharmacy organizations, because again, we need to speak with a united voice and a united front, because when it came down to test to treat, where were the pharmacy organizations? They put out lovely statements that were expertly crafted, but I'm sure wonderful communications and PR companies that they've paid lots of money to, right? But where was the action, right? And so like I go on these calls, these ASPR calls at the, you know, at the state and the federal level, and I listen to them talk about, well, you know, the reason why we made this decision is because so pharmacists are already so overwhelmed. I'm like, did you ask the pharmacists? Did you talk to them? Did you ask them if they were okay with this? Because you already gave them a bunch of work already. Mm-hmm. And you didn't ask them before.
But now we care.
We care. And I think it's because it was a pushback. It was pushback from the AMA in particular, because they felt like we were encroaching on their revenue source.
I think that, yeah, I think money always is the root, right, of everything. But I think that when it comes down to it, when you think about the healthcare and the big thing that you talked about with health equity and the systems that are rigged, there's a lot of ways that the system is rigged, but it's a lot of human nature that comes into this. So we have like implicit bias, explicit biases. Then we have egos, right? So then we have, you know, the egos of all these folks with doctorate degrees. So we have them, you know, the physicians have them. And then it's just that it's that battle too. And then when you start, you know, bringing someone's, you know, bottom line and top dollar, you know, into view there, then that becomes an issue. But I'll use this as a slight plug. I led a publication, so I didn't write it by myself, but it was myself alongside physicians. So Tyson Bell, Maddie Davis, who's the Department of Health head for St. Louis, Talia Schwartz and Ozma Syed. And we have a physician assistant on the publication. And we talk about just COVID-19 therapeutic equity, but we talk about it from a racially and ethnically minoritized standpoint anyway. So we talk about how test to treat can be optimized in a way in which racially and ethnically minoritized groups can get the maximum benefit. And it's a cross-discipline publication. So, you know, we could spend all day, you know, diving into why it is that people say what they said, you know, the egos that exist. But we use this publication to showcase just that collaboration is what's going to be necessary for ensuring that equity exists. It'll be coming out tomorrow, actually, in the Lancet tomorrow, which is 5/18, which will probably be far after when the podcast will be available. But it's in the Lancet Regional Health Americas, and we actually we use that to have that conversation about making these therapeutics more equitable and how we need to use the professional organizations as more of a collaborative voice, rather than trying to fulfill one profession's interest. Because come on, you know, we all make money, you know, but at the end of the day, we take an oath to ensure that we provide the best healthcare possible to every single person. And that's gonna take more than just one group of folks to do. So we have to come together and really work hard to be collaborative in that. So I think that's the important piece there, collaboration.
I always say this, there's enough pie for everyone, right? Yes. It's collaboration over competition.
Right.
We do not need to compete, because the last time I checked, the goal was to take care of the patient.
Absolutely.
Right? So like, that's what it comes down to.
We all take the Hippocratic Oath. Like,
we all take it. We all take it. So I love that you brought up the publication. Definitely we'll make sure that we provide links to that in our show notes so that everybody can benefit from that particular publication, as well as we'll link to the ACCP Health Equity PRN. So if people want to check that out, they can check that out. So, I mean, obviously we could talk forever. You're just doing so many amazing things. There's so many things that you've even brought up on this call that I didn't even know. And I thought I followed you pretty closely on social media, but apparently I've missed some things. So, with that being said, I just kind of wanted to maybe end with a couple of things, that our audience can use as a take home. I know you said, you know, we need to think about call to action, but, you know, really, from your standpoint, I know you said you're a fairly new grad, which I would never even have known had you not said it, because you've been so impactful in the 5 short years that you've been post-graduation. Who do you think was kind of like your mentor or somebody that you feel like really made the biggest impact in you, in your professional development? And then how do you feel like there are ways that people can incorporate public health into their practice when maybe public health isn't a focus for them right now? So I want to kind of maybe just leave our audience with those two things.
Right. So I think that, you know, one thing I'm really big on is mentorship. So giving mentorship and receiving mentorship. So I would think that, or I don't think that I could identify just a single person. If I had to identify single people, then it would definitely be like my mom and dad, because they've been like just really big. And they always, you know, told us to use our gifts and, you know, to use them for good and to treat people the way you'd want to be treated, and to work at your maximum potential. So, I mean, I think that that kind of is how I framed myself moving into pharmacy. And definitely my husband in terms of public health and equity, because you need someone that holds you accountable, and he holds me accountable for using my voice. And I appreciate that, because there are times where I kind of wanted, like, you know, it's not easy to be an advocate. You know, I get pushed back all the time, and it takes a lot to, you know, to be that person that raises all these points. But I appreciate him for holding me accountable and for being a great partner in that, and for supporting me through that. I think in terms of mentorship, my ID professor when I was in pharmacy school, Dr. Dora Westkirchen. She was previously at the University of St. Joseph. She was amazing, really helpful for guiding me. I actually called her when I took my first faculty job. Like, you know, I still talk to her about serious decisions. And then a sorority sister of mine, Dr. Kiera Dotson, now Dr. Kiera Wilson. She's a pharmacist as well, but she kind of did the same ID pathway. She introduced me to infectious diseases and infectious diseases fellowships. And then Dr. Mike Ryback, who is my fellowship mentor, he's been, you know, great to this day, really great still in terms of mentorship. And yes, and Dr. Jasmine Marcellin, who's one of my really good friends, but also a mentor, Dr. Betsy Hirsch. Like, I have a ton of mentors and who have become really like lifelong friends and supporters. I'm working with one right now as we prepare this grant, Dr. Bridget Petit. A really good friend of mine, but also, you know, a mentor. And now we have like a sisterhood we forged. So really great. And I talked about my ID sisters. I think it's important that you surround yourself with people that, you know, that you can trust have your best interests at heart when you do this type of work, when you do anything. But I think that when you're doing something that may be, you know, a little hard, pushes around, it's nice to have people that support you. Oh, and I can't forget to shout out all the folks at FarmWare Wishlist. Dr. Ela Saunders, Dr. Brittany Brown, Dr. Jason Mardino, Dr. Carolyn Coe, so everybody, Amen Bandali, they've just been really great, really great supporters and even better friends. I think that if, I know that not everybody does public health, not everybody has an MPH, but I think at the end of the day, what we all want is for patients to receive the same care. So we don't want one patient to be treated better than the others. So I think that, you know, it's important that we think about equity from that broad space. We think about how is it that we can make healthcare something that everyone can reach easily. And then when you're thinking about different disease states, let's remember to teach our students that, you know, while we're teaching you these things that they provide in these textbooks, healthcare doesn't look 100% the same for every single individual, for every single person. So let's teach about it from those places where it doesn't, where maybe, you know, the patient can't afford the best, you know, dry powder inhaler. Maybe they are forced to use some type of fluticasone, and we have to figure out, you know, what is the best thing that we can give the patient for their asthma, or even talking about why is it that asthma looks different in racially and ethnically minoritized patients versus others. So really going past that normal and forcing our students to see, you know, that healthcare, while, you know, while the curriculum is designed to teach it in one way, it doesn't exactly exist that way. So I think first thing, let's train up that generation that comes behind us to think more in an equitable fashion. And I think that that's easy to do. So we have to, you know, we have to think there. And I think that we have to really do a lot to confront our own biases that may impact how we provide care, or once again, how it is that we're able to teach it and deliver it to the students. And then I think lastly, I would conclude with saying that, you know, every single person is more impactful than what we probably give ourselves credit for. So really, like, lean into that, really think past, you know, what it is that you think you can do. And, you know, let's push our limits. I think that that will be best for everybody, but also so impactful for making sure that healthcare and the future of healthcare looks the way that we would want it to.
Wow. such incredible advice. Thank you so much, Dr. Jam. For me, what I've learned about this conversation is it's all about your tribe, right? Like who you surround yourself with and who you decide to align yourself with and collaborate with really does help to lift you up, and that anyone can practice public health, regardless of whether or not you call it that, because our goal for everyone is to provide the best quality care and for that care to look the same. And we do that when we look at healthcare through an equitable lens. And again, I just am so grateful for what you're doing and really just want to affirm and say thank you again for what you mean to the community, the communities that you serve, and to the profession of pharmacy. So thank you again for your time. And I look forward to having you back on once you get that NIH grant.
Thank you, in Jesus' name. Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure.
Stay safe, be well, and remember, public health matters.